Everyone, to yet another episode of the Drunk Friend Podcast. That's right, Drunk Friend's back. All right, huh? Who's with me, Alex? Did you get that?
No.
That was Backstreet Boys. That was a Backstreet Boys thing there. Brian, you got it, right, Brian? You
picked up on it. Of course.
Yeah, see? Come on, Alex. You went into
I get it. I knew the song. I just wasn't with you. I wasn't about to break into song and dance.
What about the dance we practiced? Guys, we just got out of the... We just practiced.
Left it in the car.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway, we're back for some 1998. Alex, as usual, being too cool for school, won't do boy band dances with me. I've been begging. He won't do it. But we're here. We're joined by Brian. So last episode, we had the other half of the Drink a Beer, Play a Game duo. And we got more and more handsome as we went. So we're here with Brian tonight. Brian, thanks for joining the podcast.
I see what you did there.
I see what you did. Thank you guys for for having me back on. Always love talking to you two. It was a good episode with Jim. I said he didn't completely embarrass us, so that's always nice. So as long as I do better than him. It's a low bar, but I think I can do it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we have all the confidence in the world in you, I should say. And as opposed to the music of 1998, we might as well just start there, which is much like 97 is a crapshoot of stuff like all over the place. In terms of songs, the hit singles of 1998, here are the names we're dealing with. We're dealing with Celine Dion, Will Smith, Bare Naked Ladies, that one really crappy Aerosmith song from the movie Armageddon. Boy bands are everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
That crappy Marcy Playground song.
Oh, I love that song. That's a great song.
Puff Daddy with Jimmy Page. I mean, come on.
That was weird.
This is a god-awful year. I do like Ghetto Superstar. That's on the list here, and I always like that song.
That is a good song.
But the rest of the hit singles that you guys have on here, not inspiring.
Don't blame us. Blame 1998.
All right.
Alex, you weren't jamming out to All My Life by Casey and JoJo?
Yeah, dude.
I don't even know what that is.
Go to a friggin' sock hop. Oh, my. I don't want to sing all these songs for Alex, but that's a banger. That's a banger. That will...
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'd recognize it if
Probably,
if I heard it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to bring it up later, but it makes sense to mention it now. 1998 was the year that TRL... came out. Total Request Live. And that was really maybe one of the first like things I engaged with that was like that. Like, you know, you could even vote for your favorite song online. So at school in the computer lab, we would all go vote for our TRL song, and it had no limit on how many votes. So we'd just sit there and just vote all day, just keep cashing in votes to see if we could get our favorite song like listed. And you're right, Alex, it was a shame that all of our options were shit, but it was still fun. You participated.
Yeah. Was TRL always in Times Square? Is that where the show started?
They had
mobs of people just like screaming, and then they actually had the artists stop by to talk a little bit. And
I tend to remember it starting much more humble. I think it was like, you know how MTV would do the... like the summer, they would be at the beach for spring break.
Oh, like,
but it would last for 5 months.
Spring break.
I remember happening because I remember there being like a beach thing when it first came out, and like Carson Daly was hanging out in like a beach hut, and it was very low key.
Okay.
It was just like a segment. But I think it got really popular when they went back to New York. People were beating down the doors because, I mean, again, it was something that everyone could participate in.
Yeah, that was a huge deal. And that was a seismic change in MTV, which. At the time, I would have been watching practically 24 hours a day, just because that was how I got my music fix in those days. So, I think 98 might have been the year that Napster became a thing. Actually, I'm going to look that up, because 98 probably would have been around the time that I made my first mix CD, if I had to guess. But and that had that mixed CD. I wish I could go back and find that, because it was like, you know, that one. I wish it was a little bit taller. I wish it was a
Skilo.
Baller.
Yep.
Skilo, yeah, that song was on there. Aha, Take on Me was on there. There were like demos from my friend's band that were on there. And yeah, the initial release of Napster was until 99, so it was the next year when that became a thing. But yeah, for the moment in 98, I was all about MTV. And yeah, TRL was a huge, massive deal because it was so different from everything else that they had done at that point. So
yeah,
it was. I mean, it's fun. It just wasn't really for me necessarily.
Well, no. And I think a big part of it, too, is that it got, you know, because of the boy band craze hitting at the same time.
Yeah.
All of that tended to float to the top because a particular demographic that MTV appealed to also was thriving hot for the boy bands. But I do remember there being some holdovers from 97 being on TRL, because I remember getting really excited because sometimes you weren't able to see cool videos, really, unless people voted them up, because most of the daytime television for MTV was like the Real World and Road Rule stuff. There wasn't like a ton of
it was starting to get to that point, and they were really leaning hard into the reality TV thing.
Yeah, and I remember seeing like the Prodigy, was it like Firestarter being on there and be like, wow,
yes,
that got voted number 7 tonight, that's awesome. And I also remember, I mean, you called out the Aerosmith song. Aerosmith was like my favorite band as a kid. I didn't like this song, but I just wanted to see them on TV. So I got really stoked when that one came on. I was pretty sick of it after a while, though. But yeah, just a lot of fun memories. I also remember like when your favorite song did make the cut, but it was like number 10. They only played like 18 seconds of it. And you're like, shit, what was the point of even having it on the show? If you're not going to play the whole thing, you can play the chorus.
That's like the music equivalent of like, remember back in the 90s? Remember back in 98 when you were like, say you're a fan of like the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Kansas City Royals, and they still had that rule back then that one player from every team needs to make the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah.
So you just sat up and watched the All-Star game for that one player to like field a ground ball or like just do like one tiny small thing, and then that's it. It's like, really? That's all they're going to have him do? But he's an All-Star. Why isn't he doing more? But yeah, it's same spirit there. Same energy.
For sure.
I think nobody today would ever know, to your point, appreciate something like a TLR because everything is at our fingertips now. If you want something, you can search it, whatever. Yeah.
Oh,
seeing it just come up was such a big deal. Same way as like if you heard a song you actually liked on the radio and before CDs, if you had cassettes and you were making your mixtapes then. Like, that's early editing technique you had to do.
Heck yeah.
It's one of those things, like, I remember at that same exact time, my songs I really liked wouldn't come on or I wouldn't get enough. So sometimes I would switch over to the box, and I don't know if you guys ever use that, but it was that music channel where you literally could call in, request a song, because they had, like, over 400 available at any given time, and it was like a virtual jukebox of music videos.
Wow.
So
was that Fuse? Or is Fuse totally different?
I think it was different. This one was always called just The Box. And died out in like I think 99 or 2000 because it was owned by MTV. I feel remember for me it was Channel 60 for some reason. I don't know why I remember that number.
That's a good point. What was your do you remember the number for your MTV? Mine is drilled into my head. We were 19 was my cable station for MTV.
We were 39 and VH1 was 38.
See, I thought 13 for me.
There you go.
It's funny. Channel 60 was on our house all the time because that was the pay-per-view preview channel.
Oh.
So anytime there was nothing else on, I just put that on and watch movie trailers all day. And then they'd cut to like the big wrestling promo to promote the pay-per-view on every once in a while. It was good times. Mm-hmm. Listen to who was the guy back then? It would have been Michael Cole, I think, doing those bits. But yeah, that's good times all around.
Good times.
I should probably ask you, Brian, what were you actually doing yourself? What was going on in your life in 98? Anything fun?
98, I was in sixth grade, and I was definitely deep in the Attitude Era of wrestling.
Nice.
like most kids around me, you know, every chance you get, you tell people to suck it, not really appreciating what it truly means because you're doing it to everyone, including adults.
True.
Yeah, I was also, I've always been into like MMA, so I was one of those early adopters watching UFCs back then, and this is when it was real brutal, like all night tournaments.
Yeah. Isn't that like Dan Severn, Mark Coleman, like those guys?
All those guys. Tank Abbott, yeah.
Yeah, Tank Abbott, yeah. God, that's an old name.
But it was one of those deals where I was also, so sixth grade, I'm stupid right now, I can't think age-wise, but I don't know about you guys. We had places called like the Palace and like skating rinks that we would go to all the time. But I was also, I played roller hockey. So I was one of the ones that did roller hockey. And I see all these songs. And you mentioned Ghetto Superstar. I remember you could go up to a booth, ask someone to play a song. So there was a girl I liked. She liked that song. I played it. That was my way of getting her to skate with me. So, you know,
nice.
To Ghetto Superstar.
Nice. It's all, well done.
It's romantic until the ODB section kicks in, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I had to break out my skills of singing, which I have none, so it didn't last long.
Yeah, yeah, dude. But,
yeah, sixth grade, it's a weird time.
Yeah, it is a weird time. We didn't have, we had like a skating rink, but I think it died out in like the early 90s, so 98. I was trying to think. I don't think there was much of a hangout spot other than we had one duplex theater in our town that had some like arcade machines, but even around 98, people weren't really spending a lot of time there. I mean, I don't really know what else we were doing. I think maybe the internet had caught on and people had gravitated toward just staying home and being on Yahoo Messenger. I don't know what people were up to.
AIM. Yeah. AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah,
ooh,
I guess so.
That's a good. Do you guys remember your first AIM names?
I don't remember the first one I had because it was just a word. It was randomly generated with a bunch of numbers behind it, and I basically just ran with that because I didn't care. I remember rolling with the name Wheeze, W-E-E-Z.
Okay.
I don't know why. I don't know how that stuck or where it came from, but I was just like, okay, that's what I am now. It's one syllable. It's people remember it, so I'm just gonna roll with it. Whatever. That became like my online handle for like 10 years.
Okay. Nice.
I don't know why. But I don't even like Weezer like at all. So I got asked that all the time. Oh, you just love that band. Like, no. But yeah, do you remember any early screen names that you would have had?
I don't. It was probably something lame, like just my name. I was just ripe for grooming. I just put my name everywhere. I wasn't that creative, unfortunately, at least not then.
I was going to say, I had the super cringe of like, for that period, everyone I knew, like the cool thing to do was like put X's in front of your name or behind your name. So I literally was X Scream because I love that movie from 96, obviously. X Scream 911.
Wow.
I don't know why or how, but I, you know, once again, being the badass I was when in my Attitude Era, listening to my DMX and my Offspring and Korn, I was like, oh, that sounds like dangerous. That's real cool. So
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I would
that
have been
stuck
afraid
with me
you.
Forever.
I would have not let my full ass name profile near your scary profile, that's for sure.
You're like, no, this Travis name is not accepting your friend request.
That was actually my screen name. It was this Travis name. That was it. A good guess. I did want to, you know, you listed some of the artists here, but for songs, you know, the songs themselves, Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On, still overplayed.
I think once... Just playing it once is overplayed.
That's true. Getting Jiggy With It. Na 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 na. We've already covered All My Life. Don't Want to Miss a Thing. 1 Week by Bare Naked Ladies. Holy shit.
Awful.
That song everywhere.
I'm sorry to be just such a downer and hate everything.
You hate everything.
I can't. It can't be overstated how obnoxious I thought every one of these songs were.
But the Weird Al cover of 1 Week, solid.
Oh, yeah. So, there you go.
Lauryn Hill's Doo-Wop, that thing. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to pause between the two. That way you can acknowledge the parentheses of the that thing. just so you guys know.
Well done.
It's very important.
It is. Everybody, Backstreet's Back, which is weird to me that that song is just called Everybody. You have to sing it to understand why it's called that.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good trivia question. Like, what's the real name of that particular song? Yeah. Not many people would guess that correctly.
Yeah, they would probably say Backstreet's Back. You're right.
Yeah.
And speaking of back, we got I Want You Back from NSYNC. And I think that was their first, I think that was their big coming out of the coming out the gate song. And then you already covered the Puff Daddy Come With Me, Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground, which I enjoy, and Ghetto Superstar. Just, I think between the three of us, maybe our collective three, our favorite of the bunch here, Ghetto Superstar.
It's mine for sure.
Yeah, yeah. That of this is a weird list. I mean, it is way more pop heavy than I would have expected, which I also look like, okay, there was movies at the time, and that's a thing I don't think you see quite as much, like just songs from movies being as top charting as these were. But yeah, this was clearly a rom-com or a romantic movie, heavy R&B poppy era. So Ghetto Superstar, yeah, that's probably going to be
that's going to be
my favorite.
It's also fair to say that, like, I pulled that song list from the Billboard top charts or whatever. So that's going to skew heavily, obviously, pop. There were, you know, and I just kind of pulled it up here because even I was a bit in disbelief, but there were some, I guess, at the twilight of alternative, or maybe the I don't even know what you call this genre of music, but it's stuff like You Get What You Give by the New Radicals and Save Yourself by Stabbing Westward and Closing Time by Semisonic. Like, all of those songs also came out in 1998. I don't even know what genre they like, light alternative or something, but that stuff was out there.
A lot of the bands that we talked about early on in this podcast series thing that we're doing, a lot of those bands are gone. Guns N' Roses is gone.
Yeah.
Metallica sucks now because they because of Load and Reload. Nirvana's gone. Soundgarden broke up in 96. Faith No More broke up in 97. Pearl Jam's still there, but their stuff has taken kind of a nosedive a bit. Alice in Chains was, nobody knew what the heck was going on with them. They were still a band, but not really. So yeah, it was kind of a weird time. There wasn't a lot of like music that reflected the early part of the decade, you know, like a lot of that just kind of dried up, disappeared.
It did. It really did. So that was songs, but albums. It's interesting how, like, songs and albums, like, the top songs and, like, the top albums kind of are differentiated somehow. But, like, some of my formative music, which is weird to say because I don't really listen to it now, but stuff like Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie and Korn, like, that stuff was, like, huge in 98. Those songs obviously weren't,
huge,
like, pop-heavy songs that you were going to hear on the radio and weren't going to chart, but they formed a generation of people that really loved giant black T-shirts.
Sure did.
I mean, yeah, you're not wrong. Well, let me see here. It's Marilyn Manson. We forgot to talk about what was it, Antichrist Superstar? Whenever it was that came out.
It was 96.
That was massive. That was a ginormous album at the time. Like, everybody, like, I don't know. It was one of those things that, like, everybody talked about it. Everybody had, like, at least one Marilyn Manson shirt and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a massive, massive deal back in the day.
Yeah, that was 96. So the follow-up was Mechanical Animals. And then you mentioned DMX, Brian. You had It's Dark and Hell is Hot. That went straight to the top of the charts.
Which is why it's so amazing. I look at, to your point, the list of these albums to what the top songs were. Like, DMX, that was this, I mean, without doubt, for me, that's the GOAT of this list. For me, in the area I grew up, like, that, Jay-Z were my probably two most, definitely, like, the Beastie Boys, but the Offspring Americana, like, dude, I love that. I think, I forget, for, like, a talent show, I tried singing Pretty Fly for a White Guy. It was, like, you know, but I look at this list, there's not any of these, I would say, are complete. Terrible. I'm not as familiar with Garbage, especially that album. But literally everything else on here, I go, yeah, I probably still every once in a while listen to songs from any one of these albums. And yeah, it was better. a better year of music than I guess the songs led on. Let's put it that way.
Right. Like, I'll go to bat for the first Rob Zombie solo album, mm-hmm. Hellbilly Deluxe. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff. Anytime Dragula comes on, or Living Dead Girl, yeah. Like, those are good songs.
Yeah, those are fun. Yeah,
for sure.
I think version 2.0 by Garbage is maybe my favorite on the list. I enjoy a lot of these, but that one's awesome.
That's a go-to. Now, do you have a favorite song from that album?
Yeah, you got Push It on there. You got I Think I'm Paranoid, Dumb. I mean, if you're a Garbage fan, you know those songs.
Mm.
I do know Push It and...
I know I Think I'm Paranoid. Mm-hmm. I don't know the other two.
They're good.
And I know, like, the stuff before that, of course, but...
They're probably songs you've heard and you don't know by name, I would assume.
Yeah.
But yeah, I only know Push It because of Gran Turismo 2.
There you go.
Great callback. Yeah. Oh, man. You're totally right.
I had a chance to see I think it was Garbage and I want to say like Alanis Morissette in concert, not long, but it got canceled for maybe it was COVID. I don't remember. Maybe this is just a dream I had that was awesome. But man, that would have been a great 90s evening. Outkast Aquamini. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know who Outkast was till like early 2000s, but I wasn't listening then, but
they had the Rosa Parks song on it, man. That was everywhere.
Yeah, back of the bus. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I'm like you, Alex, like I didn't really listen to Outkast before, you know, Bombs Over Baghdad and those songs,
right?
But now that I'm doing this weird thing of going back and trying to expand my horizons on listening to music and going through the top 500 albums listed by Rolling Stones. That one was actually number 500. So I have listened to the whole thing since then.
Dude, I did the same thing. Did we talk about this? Because I know we're both into spreadsheets.
We're like, super into lists. Yeah, we definitely talked about this.
Oh,
yep.
Man.
I did the same thing. And I got to like album like 215 and like flamed out. Was like, all right, I need to pause. And then I never went back. It was like 6 years ago. But that's awesome. That's awesome. How far in are you on this endeavor?
Not far. I'm probably in the I think I just broke 400, so probably high threes.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's an enlightening experience.
I make it a habit. If I'm going to do it, I have to listen to the album in one sitting.
Yes.
But I had to break that rule really quick when they decided – like some of the things on the list are like, you know, some random country song singer I don't know and his greatest hits and 60 songs. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
Yes. Yeah, I did. You're right. I broke the rule for that as well. I just kind of listened to like the 10 around it just to soak it in, just to get the flavor, the whole thing. But no, it was a fun endeavor. And I created a playlist of songs from that experience that I liked, even if I already knew the album. Or the artist, I still contributed to that playlist, and it's still something that I return to. We're getting away from 1998, but that's cool that you did that. Alex, you should waste years of your life and do the same.
No, that sounds fun. So, do you have a favorite that you've heard so far, Brian?
I know this is where Trav and I are secret brothers in the sense that I keep a spreadsheet. I score each album after it's done, and I write out the names of the songs that I like, and same deal, I made a playlist of songs. I don't know off the top of my head, but I think like if I'm doing on a scale of say 1 to 10, there's only been a couple at this point that have maybe hit like a 9 that I really, really love. But I think they might have also been the albums I kind of was already familiar with. But I have found a lot of other songs and Aquemini from Outkast, that's definitely one of those where I went, okay, it's pretty good album.
Yeah, it really is. I think the Stone Roses was a band that I hadn't been that familiar with that I found on that list and was like, oh, I think this is kind of my jam. So it could happen. It could happen. And of course, I said Aquamini in jest instead of the correct way of saying it, because that was the way all of my friends pronounced it. And
Aquamini,
yeah. And it's broken my brain, and I can't say it any other way. I just want to let the listeners know that I'm aware that I'm wrong. Alex's favorite Metallica album came out in 1998. That's Garage Incorporated.
Hey, I don't mind Garage Inc. That's got some good demos on it.
I know. I was just fucking around.
Oh.
Can't let me have anything?
No, I know. I know. it wasn't Load or Reload, which I know we're not even allowed to bring up on the podcast. And we haven't even gotten to St. Anger yet. But I thought Garage is pretty fun. There's some good covers on that.
Yeah, they do that Killing Joke cover of The Weight that kicks ass.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And every time I've seen them in concert, they're like, whatever the song is you play before your encore, what is that called? Your penultimate core?
Yeah.
They always play a song off of that.
Hmm.
They'll hit us with one cover.
Did they play So What when you saw them live? Or Last Caress or any of that stuff? Like the punk stuff?
From the Garage?
Are those on there? I can't even remember. Because those songs are... The way they play those songs is a lot of fun.
I think one time they played Whiskey in the Jar... And
no, you're saying it wrong. It's Whiskey in the Jar. Oh, yeah,
sure, which is the preferred way. That's my favorite way. I want to say, they also played the Danzig song,
Die, Die, My Darling,
yeah, or the Danzig, the one he wrote, yeah.
And of course, there's Turn the Page, yeah. Oh, and here I am.
I just pulled up my old set list. Stone Cold Crazy was one that they played too.
Oh, isn't that a Queen song?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fun. Right on.
Pretty fun to hear them do. All right. Are we done with music? Is that we music it up?
Musicked it up, I think.
Yep.
All right. Should we go into sports and I'll just get this out of the way?
Now to Alex with sports.
All right. So a little bit of context. The Vikings. I am a Vikings fan. And nobody is a Vikings fan by design. Nobody's like, if you introduce the sport of American football to somebody that doesn't know what it is, like say you go to like France and find somebody, you're going to teach them the game. Okay, now you got to pick a team. They're not going to pick the Vikings ever because they've had so many horrific losses, bad trades, like just they're an awful team to follow. And the worst loss of my lifetime was the 1998 NFC Championship. They had just drafted Randy Moss, 21st overall in the draft, and they proceeded to just boat race everybody in the regular season. They went 15-1. They were rewriting the record book. They set the record for points in a season. Randy Moss broke a bunch of rookie records. I think he had 17 touchdowns that year. I don't think anybody's a wide receiver has even touched that since then. They were so much fun to watch to the point that you were surprised and like dismayed when a deep pass like didn't work. It's like, what? How, the three and out, the punt team's coming out, we have a punter, like since when?
Spoiled.
But yeah, then here comes the Atlanta Falcons, coached by Dan Reeves, Mr. No Nonsense himself, and he outcoached Denny Green so badly in that game. It's painful to watch because I'll never forget, like, the moment I thought, like, oh, crap, I don't think we might not win this game. It was a close game at halftime. I don't remember the score. But coming right out of halftime, the Falcons have the ball. And Tim Dwight is under center. Or he's shotgun, I think. They do a wildcat thing. Direct snap to Tim Dwight. He just takes off running straight ahead for, like, 40 yards. And nobody catches him. And at that point, I'm like, oh, crap. I don't think we're going to win this. Like, I am at that point, I'm like white knuckling, you know, my couch and stuff. Like, oh shit, this is going to end badly, isn't it? Like, we're so in over our heads against this team is like just working us like a speed bag. So yeah, they lose, and then the Falcons got kicked, their asses kicked by the Broncos.
Aww.
And I will say, even if the Vikings made the Super Bowl, which would have been great, you know, at least make a freaking Super Bowl, but the Broncos still would have beat them, I think. Vikings were too banged up at that point. They were missing too much of their defense. And I think the Broncos, it still would have been, the final score would have been like, you know, 40-38 or something like that. It would have been a really entertaining game, but yeah.
Man.
Yeah, that's my Vikings story. I hate that loss. It hurts to think about. I feel stupid for caring. And it's one of those things where it's like, why do I care so much? This is dumb. But
well, that's the tricky thing about like having a year that good is that
yes,
that you obviously do care. That's when, I mean, it's not even a fair weather fan thing. It's like you're having fun, you're kicking ass, it's great, you feel invincible. And then even though in the back of your head, you're like, this could all come crashing down. You're like, no, yep. We're good. Then when it does, it
now
sucks.
We're good. We're setting records. This Vikings team is unstoppable. We kicked the Packers' ass at Lambeau on Monday Night Football. That was like a huge deal. And I also got a Randy Moss jersey that year for Christmas. And I just remember, you know, wearing that jersey and then just like taking it off and throwing it on the couch in disgust, like it was covered in smallpox. Because I was so upset that they lost.
You know, I always think of like sports examples like that are just fly in the face of that old saying of like, it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. It's like, no, because if my team just had losing seasons my whole life, it would be fine. But the fact that they flew so close to the sun that one time and broke my heart, I'll never forget them.
Yep. And ever since then, I've been like, well, at least, you know, I've been trying to rationalize wasting my time with the Vikings. Like, well, at least they have these generational talents like Justin Jefferson and Adrian Peterson and, you know, all these great freaking players. And just watch them waste their prime, you know, and Kirk freaking Cousins and whatever. You know, it's I'm not bitter or anything.
You sound fine.
Yeah.
Alex, would you say the perfect meme for a Vikings fan is the Hawkeye quote, "Don't do that, don't give me hope"?
Yes, very much so. I think that applies to all Minnesota sports at this point. It's the Wild, the Twins, the Timberwolves, everybody. Yeah.
No, I totally understand that. I was lucky enough as a White Sox fan that the only good year we had, we won the World Series with it. Like, I don't even have to flirt with disappointment because it's like I either expect it or I'm surprised by an outrageous, undeserving season. So I feel for you, Alex. I really and truly do. And in fact, on our next episode, I'll get to share my own story, similar story. All right, what else happened? In 1998, I hear baseball was okay.
Baseball was insane. This is probably the last year that baseball dominated the sports landscape.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I think that's the early 2000s are pretty good, though. We had McGuire and Sosa trading home runs.
Crazy.
And they were both, like, just juiced to the gills. I remember that Sports Illustrated cover when they both won Sportsman of the Year or whatever, and they're both posing on the cover wearing togas, and they have, like, the thing, the leafy thing on their head to show, you know, like, to make them look like Greek gods or something like that. I don't know what they were going for, but the point is that they were wearing togas, so you could see how freaking ripped these guys were. It was absurd. Both these guys were built like the Warlord and the Barbarian, you know, 80s steroid wrestling. It's like, oh, I'm so shocked these guys are juicing. Yeah. Like, of course they are. Look at them.
The way baseball was meant to be played.
Yes, it was. I'm glad you said that. Because that was so much fun, man. Just like running down, and it was always front of the sports page, even though I lived in Minnesota. Like McGuire Sosa was right on the front page every freaking day. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, it was the talk of school. It got people interested in baseball that had no interest prior or since. My dad was into it. My mom wanted to turn it on and watch it. When those guys were up to bat, they would cut away from other games to show those guys batting toward the end of the season. I remember before the season was over, people had T-shirts that listed like every city one of them got their home run in. I'm like, where are you guys even getting these fucking shirts? Like, it was a huge deal. I don't think baseball has been not. I mean, it was, you're right. The early 2000s, I think it still had some interest.
I think the Yankees Red Sox rivalry
that was
for a while. That was huge.
I don't know that it'll ever get close to what it was during this home run battle. That was insane. And another home run battle could do it. I mean, people got interested in Judge's thing this year for some reason.
Yeah.
And that was him just breaking a record from a division. But
if he had a dude on the Red Sox that was like keeping pace with him, that'd be interesting. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that does help. That helps all sports to have that sort of legacy chasing thing. And baseball, if it's nothing else, it's legacy. People like to see that stuff. So we'll see. I enjoy baseball personally. I understand why most people don't, but man, I do remember the McGuire Sosa thing just being outrageous and super fun.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to actually, this is after interleague play had started, so we were lucky enough to see the Cardinals, and I saw, I think it was number 36 or number 37 of what he hit it off Mike Trombley at the Metrodome. And yeah, and that wasn't even the highlight of the whole experience. It was just watching him do batting practice. And that dude was just teeing off and hitting bombs like 500 feet into like nearly coming close to the upper deck in left field, which is just a mile away. It was insane. My dad was just laughing the whole time because he couldn't believe what he was seeing. He just had that like he was in disbelief, so he was just laughing.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, that was, and I felt so, my childhood friend had tickets to the game, the next game the next day. And I felt so bad for him because I think, was La Russa the manager at that point? He might have been. He sat McGuire on the bench to give him a rest.
Oh.
And so he didn't play. Didn't get to see. I think he still took batting practice, but he didn't play. But I still felt really bad. Like, that sucks.
That's funny. It's funny you have listed here the Yankees and the Padres in the World Series. My brain does not remember that Padres team at all. I don't know if maybe it was just because the Maguire-Sammy Sosa thing just overshadowed the entire season. I have no memory of the Padres being good at all.
This was the Tony Gwynn Padres, and I remember two things. I remember the big storyline they were hammering into the ground is that the Yankees used to have Sterling Hitchcock. He was a high draft pick, starting pitcher, and now he pitches for the Padres, and now the Yankees have to face him. It was dumb. And then the Braves were the ones that were supposed to get there, and they I guess they choked pretty badly. Like, I don't know if it was Maddox had a bad game or Smoltz or Glavin or whoever. So all anyone was talking about was like, oh, the Braves choked again. They're not that great, blah, blah, blah. And then the Padres just, yeah, they weren't in the Yankees league. Literally, because they were in the National League, but they weren't very good. I mean, they were obviously pretty good because they went to the World Series, but they did not have a chance. I'm pretty sure they got swept.
They got swept, yeah. They did.
There was that. I remember Kerry Woods striking out 10 guys. That was a big deal. David Wells pitched a perfect game. And he did it against the Twins, and I maintain it shouldn't count because that lineup was like full of like minor league players. But still, that was when a perfect game was like a massive deal because they happen so rarely. Now it's like every other week you hear about a no-hitter or a perfect game or whatever. But yeah, so.
Interesting. All right. What else?
We got, I forgot I'm doing a whole thing here. I'm the sports guy at the
sports desk. Yeah.
Yeah, Bulls beat the Jazz. That's the second three-peat. Jordan retires.
That was a fun
hits
series.
The winning shot.
I like that series quite a bit because
it was tense.
At that point, I was kind of pulling for the Jazz. I think I love Jordan, but I kind of just wanted to see the underdog win. And I don't care so much for the stars of the Jazz now as people, but I enjoyed watching the Stockton Malone hook up. Hornacek just out there just hitting shots from half court for no reason. Just no reason to take that shot, Hornacek, but just taking it. Ostertag,
do you remember
down in the paint?
Greg Ostertag down in the paint. Remember Antoine Carr?
Absolutely. Byron Russell.
With Byron Russell, he called Michael Michelle.
Yeah, yes, he did. But, you know,
not smart.
In the end, I think it was a 4-2 series. It felt closer than it ended up being, but I think just because every game was just kind of tense. But a lot of, like, defensive game. I remember there was, like, one game where, like, I don't know if the Jazz eclipsed, like, 70 points or something. It was crazy.
Yeah. One game was a blowout where the Jazz, I think, only scored, like, 50
points
or something. Yeah. Crazy like that.
Nuts.
Yeah. But, Scottie Pippen's back was given out on him. Jordan was exhausted because he was, you know, old. Yeah, it was a close series. We also had the Detroit Red Wings repeat as Stanley Cup champions. Michigan and I thought this was interesting. Michigan and Nebraska share a national title. Can you imagine if that happened today?
Crazy.
Like, people would lose their minds. Like, their heads would explode.
There'd be some riots.
It happened before. I think it was Colorado and Washington or something like that, like way back in the 1990 or 89 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then it happened again in in 98. But yeah, it's just weird to think of, like, everybody seemed to be okay with two national champions. So
yeah, whatever. I think it was Charles Woodson, I think, was on that Michigan.
He won the Heisman too.
Yeah. Tom Brady was also a backup, I think. He was like a sophomore that year. Yeah, crazy.
He was a backup to Drew Henson. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, Brian Griese was the, I think he was
the starter. Or Brian Griese, yeah, and then eventually Drew Henson, yeah. And then, of course, the Hell in the Cell match, the infamous match, Undertaker-Mankind, where Mankind gets thrown off the top of the cell. Brian, did you see, where were you when this happened? Were you watching? How did you hear about it if you weren't? What was going on?
Definitely while I was the, you know, all my allowance money after lots of chores would go to monthly or whatever it was in those days, the pay-per-views. And yeah, when you put this, I was happy to see this. I said this year was two major things because this is when you had the big WWF versus WCW. But the other big one for me was WrestleMania 14, Stone Cold beat Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson as a ref. This Hell in a Cell is probably that image of Mankind just getting thrown over. And as JR put it, my God, he must be dead. Like, it was just, it was insane to see as a kid. It was like, what the hell? How can I try to do that? You know, it was just all bad ideas. But yeah, that was an era of wrestling, much like baseball, where it's like,
yes,
the overt violence, the sexuality, like, it was just a different time, and we will never see something close to that again. The excitement the fans had, like, yeah, things like that, you'll never see again. So it was a very, very good time for wrestling, I'll say that.
Monday nights were, like, my highlight of the week every week. They were so friggin' entertaining, just working the remote back and forth between the two shows. It was great. I missed that. It was so much fun listening to Tony Schiavone mock Mick Foley winning the title, and then it's going, huh, that'll put butts in seats, and then flipping immediately over. It's like, oh, he's gonna win the title tonight, and flipping right over to Raw,
and it actually worked. Yep.
And it actually happened. I was like, thanks, Tony Schiavone.
Yeah, I mean, I was also like, I would buy those stacks of blank tapes. I'd record every Monday Night Raw, and I actually found my stack as I was cleaning shit out the other day. I just had this stack of VHS tapes of, like, all the Raws, all the pay-per-views. So, yeah, magical time as a kid.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Was that the Hell in the Cell? That's the one where Mankind went, like, through the top, right? And, like,
he went, over the top through the center, right, through the ring.
I remember, like, in an interview with Undertaker, who's given, like, really great candid interviews since he's retired, was talking about how, like, he swore that Mankind was dead.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, he's like, I just froze, like, he's still in character, but in his head he's like, oh shit, I think I killed,
like,
him.
Is he moving? He's like, I think I saw his arm move. Okay, he's not definitely dead, but yeah.
They almost stopped the match, apparently. Another thing I wanted to bring up, and Alex, I mean, I think there's only so much that we can cover in these episodes, but when you mentioned Mike Tyson, I was like, oh shit, when did the bite fight happen? And that was in 97. And I remember that being a massive thing. I remember my parent, we never watched boxing, don't give a shit about boxing, but we bought that fight for some reason and enjoyed all, I don't know, 17 seconds of it until Bite-ocalypse I was so confused. I was like, is this what boxing is?
Yeah.
Because I've been watching WWF, and I'm like, I think they can get away with this on Mondays. I think this is fine.
You expect him to get a steel chair. Yeah. Holyfield's got to go get a chair.
Yeah, and that was my introduction to Mills Lane, who later became a celebrity in his own right. Or maybe he already was, I'm not sure, but he was the celebrity deathmatch referee. He had his own, like, judge show, Judge Mills Lane. Maybe he had that at the same time, I'm not sure, but, like, he became a household name. I still quote Judge Mills Lane.
I think he became famous because of that fight.
So that was it for sport. We got sports, and we got the we got fake sports out of the way. We did that all in one.
Fake sports, real sports. Let's do gaming. What are your folks' gaming memories at this point of your life?
I think
this
was about the time I locked myself in sports prison, and I played basically just anything with an NCAA or an NFL or an MLB on the front and ignored everything else, maybe until I graduated from high school, for the most part. So I'm at this point, not really fun for people that are super into video games.
Were you a big EA Sports guy? Were you into... did you divert from that at all? If you were,
like, I sampled the 989 Studios. I played a little Game Day, you know, when that came out in 98. But I mean, Madden is still around for a reason. It was the go-to.
Yeah.
I do remember 98. I did get a copy of NCAA Football 98, and because it was around this time, around middle school, where I kind of discovered college football, and of course. My alma mater and the major university that was closest to me was Virginia Tech, and I just couldn't believe that they put Virginia Tech like in a game. I was like, wow, that's just right up the road. That's their stadium in a game. That's crazy. Holy shit.
That's funny.
We've driven past. Dad, come here. Dad, we've driven past this stadium. It's in the game, Dad. Couldn't believe it. And it just blew me away. Still kind of does because it's in Nowheresville, Appalachia. But that got me hooked. Just the being local. Having
quick
local
trivia
team.
For you.
Yeah.
Trev, who is on the cover of NCAA Football 98, if you had to guess? Do you remember?
I'm imagining it's got, it's quarterback, what? Right?
Yes.
Shit.
I got a clue for you.
Okay.
Fun and Gun.
Worfel? Is it Danny Worfel?
It's Danny Worfel.
Danny Worfel. Yep. Awful Worfel. All right. Yeah.
Him and his dorky looking sleeves where they kind of barely hang off his they look like tassels on a girl's bike. Like it just looked kind of silly.
Crazy.
Yeah. Brian, what were you playing? Do you remember like what you were into video game wise at that point?
Oh yeah. So this was a moment in time where I went from the Super NES to a PlayStation. And I kind of was like, I'm leaving that kiddie stuff. Like in my mind, I was like, I'm growing up. Well, once again, I'll go to the influenced by attitude era and violence and all that stuff is cool. So yep. I'm also a notorious huge horror fan. So at this point, I'm already Resident Evil Director's Cut is going to be my all time favorite game. So this year, Resident Evil 2 came out. And to me, like, I've never played a demo disc of a game more times in my life than the Resident Evil 2 demo disc. So that was my number one. I played every which way, Leon A, then Claire B, and then the inverse, and hardest difficulty, speed runs on everything I could to just play that game. But then outside of that, I definitely played a lot of Tekken 3. And oddly enough, like, I don't know how I got it for PC, but Need for Speed 3 Hot Pursuit, that was like the first one where you could be chased by the police.
Yes.
And it made me, to this day, if somehow I win, you know, one of these crazy lotteries, I won a 95 Lamborghini Diablo SV in yellow because that was the cover car. And yeah, it just stuck with me. And eventually I got the N64 and I did like GoldenEye and like some of the wrestling games, but so many titles on that system passed me by because I just had this idea like, oh, that's a kiddie toy. Like,
that's right.
You know, I want FMVs and violence and this and that. So yeah, PlayStation was the GOAT for me at this time. And that's all I cared about.
Wow.
That's a great point. The comparison that you made to wrestling is perfect because it's, I think WCW both and WWF realized, hey, the fans that have been with us since like the Hulkamania days of the 80s, they're, you know, older now. Maybe our product should also cater to older people. And I don't think Nintendo did that. I think they kind of stayed in their lane with N64. It has its own weird vibe. That's skews towards kids, but yeah, like you said, PlayStation, especially if you're a teenager or a grade school kid or whatever, like that's just the perception is like exactly what you said. Like this is like the cool kid stuff,
yep.
Lack of a better way of putting it. Plus the PlayStation was starting to get some home ports of arcade games that were almost as good, if not just as good, as the arcade games, which was just unheard of, you know, for years. And suddenly it's like, oh, you can play arcade games at home now. hence like Tekken 3, X-Men versus Street Fighter and stuff like that. So yeah, that's cool to hear. I also wanted to ask about your demo disc. Were they doing the Pizza Hut demo disc thing back then?
So I have two demo discs still to this day. I had the Resident Evil 2 demo disc came with the Resident Evil Director's Cut as a secondary disc.
Oh,
okay. So that I had that, but I do have this, and I think I got it out of a game magazine. It's like it's a yellow, purple, and like blue tie-dye disc. That was a demo. It had like Crash Bandicoot, Twisted Metal. Like it had all these great titles that you could only play for 5 or 10 minutes. Played the shit out of that too. Like that was an era of people actually played demos. Like, and I don't remember it before or after like the PlayStation. Like that was the only generation I can really think of demo discs. And you mentioned arcade, basically home ports. One game I did play on N64 because my buddy had it was I played the shit out of NFL Blitz because it came out that year in home port. So that was a great game. And I know we have some other ones listed here, but I'll shout it out for Jim because I know this is the one game he played the shit out of was StarCraft on PC.
Hey, man, he didn't shout out anything for you, so...
Well, come on. You know he can't. He doesn't want to punch up. That's all. But yeah, like I said, that demo disc thing. We've talked about it many times. Now the idea of playing a demo now is dead. But when you only had at the time, I may have had 10 to 12 PlayStation games. A demo disc goes a long way, and it fills your imagination with. What's the rest of the game going to be like? So
yeah,
that Resident Evil 2 demo being on back of Director's Cut was huge for me.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, especially when you can go get some, satiate your appetite a little bit by looking at gaming magazines and seeing like the maps and screenshots that they post. And then, you know, in Nintendo Power, they post like scores that people would send in and stuff like that. So that was always really exciting to help fill in the blanks of stuff that you've played a little bit of, but not entirely. So it just let you know that, oh, there's a much bigger universe out there that you've been exposed to about 2% of it so far. So, yeah, that's
100%.
Yeah.
Demo discs were fun. I don't think you could do that now. Well, I mean, I guess they do still exist now, just on Steam and on PC and stuff like that. I remember having a bunch of demos on 3DS when I first got that, like of some Sonic game, or it was just the first level and some other stuff, like some submarine game or something. But those were free, and I remember playing them like once. Yeah. It wasn't interesting.
Yeah.
But
the N64, I mean, this was the year of Ocarina of Time. That was good. People liked that. I didn't play it in the day, but it was a big hit, right? People liked it.
Yeah.
I'm currently playing through it right now for the first time.
No shit.
For the first time? Cool.
Yep.
I've started it 30 times. I've never finished it, so please. Are you having fun?
It's fine. I don't know how to put it. It's like it's very easy. It's well done. It hasn't grabbed me in a way where I'm like, I'm waiting for that moment of like, oh, this is amazing. Like, and maybe it's just I'm past it. Like, I think most people who remember games from this time, like, I could understand anyone picking up the original Resident Evil or Resident Evil 2 being like, what the fuck? Who liked this? it may not grab me that way, but I'm, like, going in it. Like, I want to be surprised. I want to be like, wow, this really is, like, how everyone feels. Basically, one of the best, if not the best, Zelda game. I don't know if it will be. So I'm trying to keep an open mind, but, yeah, I'm going through the motions right now, I'll say that.
Yeah, I will say a big part of the appeal at the time was just the expansion of that, of Hyrule, of the Zelda world. You know, running around Hyrule Field was exhilarating. It's just a big freaking field. Like, that's all you're doing is just running from there to the kingdom. And that was exhilarating at the time because it's like, wow, look at all this. You do that now. Like, I remember playing the 3DS version. Are you playing the original on N64, Brian?
Yep, the original.
Wow. So, yeah, I remember revisiting it for a little bit on 3DS and just being like, holy crap, look at the sheer amount of empty space in this game. It is,
yep.
You got to run all the way. You got to run your sorry ass all the way over. Like, I cannot wait to get that horse, whatever its name is.
And it's scary at night. But, that's when all the boogers come out.
They all pop up. But no, it's definitely not bad. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, like, my gut is telling me I'll walk away from being like, oh, it was fun, but it's not gonna not Link to a Past or something like that had in my mind. This is just gonna probably go on the shelf as like, okay, that was fun. I'm glad I played it.
I'll have to circle back with you to see what you think of it if you end up finishing it, just because the puzzles get pretty intensive towards the end, and I think that's what ultimately makes or breaks the game for people, is like all the different temples, especially the water temple, which is just
heard.
Yeah, but it's more annoying than anything else. It's pretty hard, but it's just annoying. But yeah, I'm interested to see what your final impressions of that one will be.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Well, what else from 98? You know, we had the big Zelda, Banjo-Kazooie. Anybody into collectathons?
No.
Uh-uh.
No, that was to Brian's point, it was kiddie stuff.
Sure. My buddy Steve on Polykill, he's maybe a year younger than you, Brian. Ate that stuff up. So he is kind of like of the generation where like collectathons are just like his thing, right? And he's probably listening right now. Mm-hmm. Hey, Steve, how's it going, bud? And so he like has this whole like affinity for those games. I had to like really kind of grow to appreciate them. And I it took me a while to kind of get that the real thrill of those games are just knowing the map inside and out, which kind of seems weird. It sounds like weird homework, but like there is an element of, I love a game if I know, it doesn't have to be a great game, but if I know every wrinkle of a map, I feel like I kind of own it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of where that comes from. And so I've gone back and played some of those and I'm like, you know what? I kind of get it. Like there is an addictive quality to these games. Like I did view them as like, no, I don't want to play the game where you just run around collecting jewels. I want to fight a dude or shoot a dude or run for a touchdown. I don't want any of this other stuff, but I've got caught in those loops, so I can appreciate those games now. But as a kid, I would not give them the time of day. It sounds like homework.
I want to play in the fun and gun with Danny Werfel.
That's oh yeah.
A really good example of what you're talking about, I think, is Donkey Kong Country 2, where you get rewarded for knowing every nook and cranny of wherever it is. That's one of those games where it's almost like they design the levels backwards. Like they put stuff in certain places, and then it's like, okay, how can we make this hidden and difficult to reach in a way that's still intuitive to find, that's not completely stupid.
Yeah.
So I think that game does that as good as any collect-a-thon. Like, it's actually fun to get 100, 101, 102%, whatever, in that game. I just haven't been able to really capture that myself and many other collect-a-thons.
Yeah, I mean, but, and some are not challenging and become boring by way of that, but things like Spyro, I think, hold up fine. Like, it's a cutesy little dragon that just blows fire, and you're like, God, what am I, eight? But when you're playing it, you're like, where the fuck is that other crystal? God.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes to the, I think it goes to the same idea. This was a time where something like a collectathon and all the games we just mentioned, and, you know, they were probably appreciated back then because games in general, like, you got cheap replayability out of it being much longer because you were looking for these little things. And the same way you would just like, maybe you couldn't access that area in the beginning where you knew something was until you got this power or this thing or whatever. So it was an appreciation of maybe trying to give people more bang for their buck, but doing it in the easiest programmable way possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we had the very unfortunate thing, one of our requests to review where it was Donkey Kong 64.
Jesus Christ.
God,
yeah.
You talk about paint. Like, that soiled any thoughts of me trying to enjoy a collectathon where I was like, who likes this?
It makes you smoke the whole pack, though. That's not fair. That's brutal. Yeah. Brutal. And it can't be a coincidence that Banjo-Kazooie and Will Smith's Getting Jiggy With It came out in the same year. I think that had to be planned by the by God.
I think it was.
You're right. They both have the same like colorful, childlike mannerisms. I don't know. When I think of one, I should be thinking of the other.
You should.
They just go together.
You should. And the Jiggies. And then there's Forsaken 64, Forsaken 64, which by the cover, I'm so glad Alex covered that game for...
I know.
that's why I brought it up, because we've all seen that cover. We've all seen that commercial like 100 times. And because I remember it played all the time on Saturday morning. I still watched, you know, like X-Men and stuff like that on Saturday morning, because X-Men was my jam.
Too badass for collectathons, but watching X-Men in his pajamas.
PJs with my peanut butter Captain Crunch. Damn right. But yeah, Forsaken, that game is actually pretty good, especially, and it's four-player compatible. The controls are a bit loose and crazy, but it's hard to see what you're doing and where you are and where you're going, but
sounds great.
It's a fun game.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Alex, I mean, you covering that was the same as you covering, oh my God, what the hell is the name of that Super NES game with the guy playing the banjo?
Oh, the banjo game Phalanx?
I don't know who came up with these covers, but good on them, because more than anything, it just got you going, what is this?
Yeah.
So you'd at least rent it, like just on a whim. Like, I need to see what this was. And yeah, this game definitely, I mean, your video, it covers it so well.
Oh, thanks. I also just wanted to point out Star Wars Rogue Squadron, just because that game blew my freaking mind when I played it. That was what I was hoping for with a Star Wars game, just like flying ships around, shooting stuff like Star Fox type stuff. Just in X-Wings and, you know, all the familiar Star Wars stuff. That game was a lot of fun. And I also, of course, you know, we're going to get emails from people saying, you didn't talk about this, so I do have to say Final Fantasy Tactics, Metal Gear Solid. We also have stuff on the Panzer Dragoon Saga and Magic Knight Rayearth for Sega Saturn. Now, I think the approximate value of those two games together, it comes out to about $80 billion. So if you have either of those, you're in good shape. But as games, they're actually pretty good. But then you got on PC Half-Life. That's your Half-Life came out. That's your Baldur's Gate came out. And Baldur's Gate is awesome, especially Baldur's Gate 2. But
Third one's supposed to come out next year.
I can't wait. That's going to be so awesome. And also, last but not least for games, this was when Pokemon started ruling the universe, basically.
Still does.
And, I guess it still does, although not as efficiently.
You're right, yeah.
Because I guess they're having trouble with, like, you know, a lot of glitches and stuff like that. Were either of you Pokemon people? Because I was not.
No, but my buddy's little sister was super into them, and I remember this being a thing, because we would kind of make fun of the kids that played Pokemon, I know, but we were middle school, so making fun of other kids was like how you felt alive. And
that's what you did.
Yeah.
How you felt alive.
And so, like, the younger kids would be playing Pokemon, we're like, baby's playing your Pokemon. And my buddy's sister had a Game Boy and had Pokemon. I remember my buddy telling me, he was like, so... I had the Game Boy, and I thought I still had my, I don't know what he was playing on it, but he thought he still had his game in there, but when he got to the bathroom, his sister had started playing Pokemon. He's like, so I'm in there shitting, I just had to play Pokemon, because it was all we had. And I was like, you know what, dude? It's actually not too bad. You just run around, you find these little guys, and you start fighting them. He's like, I hate to say it, but I think it's kind of fun. I was like, get out of here! We're not friends anymore! Ooh, gross!
Yeah.
But I remember that being like a whole thing, like he like sitting me down and admitting to me that he had played Pokemon. Like, I went be his friend anymore. Like, dude, it's fine. I'm a little disappointed, but we can get through this.
He's like, and I was also listening to Celine Dion while I was playing it.
And I'm like, yeah, that song's everywhere. That's fine. But why were you playing Pokemon?
I'm the next Dr. Phil.
Yep.
Yeah.
I guess back then it would have been what I think Donahue was off the air. You'd have to go. You might have to go all the way to Springer for that.
Or Sally Jesse, maybe. Yeah, maybe Sally Ricky Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, Sally Jesse. Yeah, Ricky Lake. Those Sally Jesse. Yeah, that's where you're headed. Good job.
But yeah, so Brian, you were saying you weren't in the Pokemon craze. Is that?
No, not it. I mean, it was, yeah. Once again, I'll attribute it to it felt like the kiddie thing to do. And I at that point, I still to this day, I have a brick original Game Boy. I did get a Game Boy Advanced from a Goodwill maybe 10 years ago for like $5, and it works fine. I never got really into the handheld games. So it just completely, that, the cartoon, all of it, every piece of Pokemon passed me by completely. So, yeah, I have no nostalgia, no real connection. I've never even beaten a Pokemon game, any game, all the way through. I've played a couple of them. Same deal. I get it. I totally see the appeal. Grinding, need to collect everything. Yeah. But, yeah, just... It's just not my type.
How is it that your followers get you to play games? How'd they get you to play the Donkey Kong 64? Because maybe we can get them to...
it's on our Patreon. And for the $5 tier, if you sign up for that.
Pokemon Red.
Okay.
Start at the ground floor. Yeah. Work your way up.
I'm about to throw some cash to see you play Pokemon, is what I'm saying.
I think I got what you were putting down.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, since you guys maybe weren't fans, since then, has there been a Pokemon game that's really like, that's your goat for you?
I guess for me, it's the Game Boy Advance ones. It's not that I'm not a fan. I just kind of ignored it because I wasn't the target audience at the time. So it's just like, well, this isn't for me. So I'm just not going to pay attention. It wasn't until way, way, way later. That I started like, oh yeah, I should probably like play one of these. But I don't know the names. I'm bad with the names of those games. I just remember the Game Boy Advance Pokemon was perfect. It was like the perfect portable game to have because the way it's structured, it's like, yeah, you pick it up, you play like three battles, and then maybe your bus show, you know, you're playing on the bus and you get off and you got to shut it off and your game saves. Like it's the perfectly structured portable game. So I appreciate it for that for sure. It's easy to see why it got so popular. But yeah, I don't really seek that stuff out myself, but, what about you, Trav? Do you, I know you're more of a Pokemon connoisseur.
Am I?
Than I am.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, you've played more than me.
I did play one and, or two maybe, but I think they're fun. I'm not like into it enough to where I can like name a Pokemon if it's not Pikachu and maybe two others. So I'm not like a super fan, but I did want to experience it. I wanted to see what was going on. So I think my first one was actually notably one of the easier ones, like specifically developed as a gateway for any new players in the newer generation of gamers to get into, which was, I think, like Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu, like that version. And so it was kind of like, it was easy, but I understood the loop. And so then I went back and played like Leaf Green and got to the end and got bored and quit. So I famously didn't finish that one. Need to go back and do that. But yeah, I dig them. They're just not things. I'm not looking for the next one to come out. I haven't seen the movies or the anime. I don't follow any of that stuff. All right. Did we game it up? I feel like we had a good number of games there.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Solid games there.
Let's jump into the movie pool. Movies, I want to say, I like this group of movies I'm seeing for 1990. We got Saving Private Ryan. I like that one. I still use that Matt Damon gif of him rocking back and forward, scared to death, all the time when I'm stressed out.
Yep. I can relate to that, you know, somewhat in an emotional sense, especially when I'm, you know, stuck in a meeting at work and I have no idea what I'm doing and people are throwing things at me.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to say things and I don't remember what they are. And Saving Private Ryan is pretty dark. That's got like a steep viewing curve, I guess you could call it, because the way that movie starts is freaking brutal.
Yes.
Inspired every World War II afterwards to do that same scene. Yeah. Like every Call of Duty and Medal of Honor had that same D-Day scene.
I was just going to say, I remember the Medal of Honor game that had that same thing, storming the beach. Yeah. Oh, that was such a huge deal. I can't wait to talk about that on, the 2005 episode? Or I don't know. Yeah, I'll be talking that game up big time. But yeah, Saving Private Ryan, Truman Show. That was a good one to watch because it was, to my knowledge, it was the first time Jim Carrey did like a serious movie.
I think that's true. Yeah, and that was an interesting one too. It was like the concept for that.
I mean, that was, as we said, I feel like 98 really showcases such a good turning point in technology, civilization. This movie, I think it doesn't get enough credit for one. Yeah, Jim Carrey taking a turn, not just being funny. Like, you actually feel for him by the end of that movie. Like, when he hits the wall, you're like, oh, son of a bitch. Yeah. But, like, that idea that we all kind of feel like, we're the center of attention on everything is what we live now day in, day out with everything we do. Like, you kind of feel like, oh, everything's on me. I think it's a movie that's definitely underrated for his catalog, especially.
Well, I can tell you this, the SNES drunk show would get shit ratings and get canceled right away.
What? I'd never turn that off, dude.
No.
My life is pretty damn boring.
What you don't know is Travis is really Ed Harris and he's behind the scenes.
Classic.
Trav doesn't have the heart to tell me that I've been canceled. You know, 2 years ago. I lasted 3 weeks.
Yeah. Don't trust me. The cameras are still on, Alex. They're still on, bud.
Big Lebowski.
Yes.
I remember seeing this in theaters.
Did you love it when you first saw it? Like, at your, I don't know, were you like a junior in high school?
I thought it was hysterically funny. I was 16. I was in, I would have been a sophomore at this point in high school. I loved it. I thought it was hysterically funny. My friend and I went bowling for like a week straight after. just that movie, just like, oh, this seems like a decent place to hang out. Let's just go bowling. And it, sure enough, we were saying, fuck it, dude, let's go bowling, you know, like every single day. I loved that movie. I still love it.
Yeah, I mean, I love it now. But for some reason, when I first watched it, I thought it, like, ended randomly. I was like, did it cut off? Is there more? I wasn't used to movies just, like, not really having a point. You know what I mean? Like, there was no, like, right off into the sunset kind of thing.
It really is just a showcase of weirdos.
Yeah.
Like, here's these... here's this strange gang with Flea. We want some money, Lebowski. And
I just loved when John Goodman was on screen, and that was kind of it. And I was like, I don't think I got that movie. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. Like, I always question, like, why does everybody love this? And then, like, you're in college, it's like a rite of passage to walk around and quote that movie. And I was like, I think I need to watch it again and figure out, like, what the fuck is happening.
There's a lot of really silly details in that movie that I really enjoy. Like, how the dude has this habit of repeating stuff that he hears. When he's at the grocery store at the very beginning of the movie, he's like, you know, when he drinks milk out of the carton right there, he's checking out and there's George Bush Sr. On the TV saying this aggression will not stand about something or other. And sure enough, like, four scenes later, this aggression will not stand, man.
Yeah.
it's so good. He does that throughout the movie. So that stuff like that brings a lot of rewatchability for me. I think I've seen it like, I don't know, 17, 18 times, like a ton of times. I love it. It's one of my all time favorites.
Did you just glance over to say the number of notches in your bedpost? Because you're like, was it 17 or 18? I can't remember. Close.
It's like, well, I watch it at least once a year. How many years has it been since then?
It's oddly specific yet vague number. Yeah. Brian, what's your profess your love for Big Lebowski?
I was going to say, Trav, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. Like, when I first, the very first time I watched it, I knew I liked it, but I was like, oh, that was funny. Like, different style, but it is a movie for me every time I watch. Now Alex is saying, I pick up another, like, little detail here and there, and to me, though, yeah, Walter, John Goodman steals the show, and everything he does, his delivery, like, just the little shit, like, the one moment that I love probably more than anyone else does, and I don't know why I get it. It's when he kind of like whispers to himself as he's being yelled at by dude. I forget what they're yelling about, and I think it's like he's like, you know, you freaked out on what's Smokey or whatever. He's like, I'm not the one yelling right now. Like, kind of just turns his head very subtly, and it's just in those little moments where he's not doing the full freak out that I really, really appreciate it. Yes, that was it. Yeah, that was the little not just calmer you are. It's just I love that movie, and it is one now that I appreciate every time I watch a little bit more. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. Even having Sam Elliott in there for just the reason to narrate with that voice.
It makes me wish I had a friend named Donnie I could yell at. That's the biggest thing.
You're out of your element, Donnie.
One last thing I want to bring up about Lebowski is that there is a theory, a fan theory, that Donnie is a figment of Walter's imagination.
Oh.
Like he's an old war buddy. Because the reason folks say this is because the dude never talks to Donnie. He never even addresses Donnie once in the movie.
What?
Except when the ashes get spread on him.
Yes, that's right. That's the only time that. But I'm telling you, if you don't laugh at that moment, I don't know what to tell you. Like that's the biggest laugh in the movie. But yeah, that's. I always thought that was a fascinating wrinkle that. Folks introduced.
Man.
Yeah. What if this person doesn't even exist?
Dude, I got to watch that tonight. You shouldn't have. Nah, damn it. Now, yep. That's right after we're done. I got to go watch it. All right. Meet Joe Black. I've actually never seen Meet Joe Black. Has anybody met Joe Black?
No, I've never seen it either.
Me neither.
All right, we'll skip that one. But apparently it was a big deal in 1998. American History X. I think I watched that in a college class.
Yeah. That's a horribly depressing movie with a horribly depressing ending. But it's got some great scenes, like
Norton's so good in that.
Where, and it's got Captain Sisko from Deep Space Nine, where he tells Derek in the movie, like, "Has anything you've done made your life better?" And that's when it all hits him, like, "Oh shit, I'm sick of being angry. Like, this is dumb." So, yeah, that movie is really good. Everybody, it's one of those movies that everybody should watch at least once.
Yeah.
It's like you said. It's disturbing, but the acting, there's not a single actor in that movie that doesn't do an amazing performance where it's good enough acting-wise, it makes me want to come back. I always list there are certain movies I've seen once, I'll never need to see again.
Like
The Kids, I've seen once, and I never ever want to watch again.
Or Schindler's List.
Yeah, but this one, like I said, if it's one of those deals, if it's on, I'll probably just be like, all right, which part is it? Because, Ed Norton... It has to be like, you're like, how is this the same guy as Death to Smoochie?
Right.
Isn't that crazy? I think that might have been the same year, actually. Was that 98?
Oh, I don't know.
Ooh, that's a good question.
Let me check real quick.
No 2002.
That was years later.
Damn. Yeah. Man, Ethan.
But yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Yeah, Edward Norton. Crazy range.
Yeah, dude. Mm-hmm. Jacked in that movie. And then Ethan Suplee famously not jacked until later after that movie.
Yeah.
The Faculty. I saw that on a date. I thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was fun for the time. That's your classic, like, you know, late 90s, you know, horror-ish type.
Kind of a rare horror standout, too. I feel like a lot of horror from that era really didn't survive the times. But, you know, Usher was in The Faculty, man. That was crazy.
Elijah Wood. Like all
Josh
these...
Hartnett.
Very random cast, but it is, you know what, this is a guilty pleasure. Every time it's on, I'm going to put it on. Now, it's not in the same vein as, like, Fifth Element for me, but this is up there in terms of, like, it's just a stupid turn off your brain, enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good time. Armageddon, you know, we talked about the Don't Want to Miss a Thing Aerosmith song. I heard that way more than I ever wanted to, which made me actually not ever want to watch the movie. And I don't think to this day I've ever seen Armageddon because I hate that song. So I'm afraid that they're going to play the song. I'm like, don't play the song. I don't want to hear the song again. Do you guys like Armageddon?
Yeah.
No, nobody?
Not really. I was kind of done with Bruce Willis at that point, I think. Like, I'm trying to think, like, where he would have ranked in my action movie star hierarchy. Because I loved Arnold. I loved Stallone. I have a soft spot for Van Damme. Seagal's an asshole. And Bruce Willis was just kind of there. You know, he's Die Hard guy, and he hadn't done much for me outside of Die Hard.
Wow.
So I wasn't really looking forward to that one. Never got into it or anything like that.
Sounds like you did want to miss a thing. Like a...
Son of a bitch.
I walked right into that one.
That's why I'm here.
Well done.
Brian, did you Armageddon it?
I did see this. It was another... take a girl out on a date, go see Armageddon because she wants to see Armageddon, and it was fine. What blew my mind when I figured
out
that
movie is so long.
It's very long. Yeah, I mean, and that's the age where all you're trying to do is make
it. Yeah,
money.
And you're
so
like, can this,
like, whatever.
Yeah.
Is this worth it? I don't care. Oh, there's a song in the background that I'm going to hear for the rest of my life way too much, but whatever. It's one of those deals where. What surprised me more is when I figured out, and I it wasn't that year, but it was years later. I was like, this is the same guy who did Bad Boys and The Rock.
Oh, is it really?
Did this.
Wow.
Yeah. Michael Bay. And
oh,
I'm
it is
like,
Michael Bay, of course. Yeah.
And I was like, how, like, if that's what felt weird to me. But I've honestly, like, maybe seen this movie twice or three times in my life. And yeah, I don't miss it. I never get it. Inkling to be like, you know, I want to pop that.
I want to see 2.5 hours of the world ending around bad ballads. That's what I want.
Exactly. Yeah.
I tell you what's fun though, Rush Hour. I love that movie.
Yeah, great movie. Yeah.
That one and
a lot of fun.
I even like the second one. Third one could do without, but Chris Tucker was so he's just on top of the world around this time.
Yeah,
insane.
You watch that and you go. How did he not have just the most booming career after this?
Yeah.
Just cringe.
Yeah, it just felt... And it's also a movie, a product of its time. You'd never see it get made today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of stereotyping there. Played up for comedy, basically, obviously, but...
Exactly. Yeah. But no, it was great. Like, and this was a movie that I was in a deep, like... Anything Jackie Chan. I just wanted to see his stunts, and even more than a movie, I always want to see the outtakes after his movies for all the stunts he messed up or missed that they always played. So, yeah. Great movie.
Whatever year Rumble in the Bronx is, I think that might have been like 96, but that was a big deal because that was like the first Jackie Chan movie that was like a big United States release, and that was the first time I got to see him and him do his thing. And it, you know, what do you even say when you're like a kid and you see something like that? Like this dude's like a real life superhero. This guy's amazing.
So, exactly.
Yeah, yep. I was all in on anything Jackie Chan at that point.
And my favorite Rush Hour quote: Chris Tucker, $50 million, man. Who do you think you kidnapped? Chelsea Clinton. And I still say that when my wife says they said that they would fix the HVAC, but it's going to be like $2,500. I'm like, $2,500? Who do you think they kidnapped? Chelsea Clinton. She's like, stop doing that. That's no one knows who Chelsea Clinton. People don't even talk about her anymore. You have to pick somebody else. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No, I'm quoting the movie.
Yeah.
The Water Boy is what the last one we got listed here. That Adam Sandler vehicle. Kind of goofy. I don't know that I loved it as much as everybody else, but
I didn't like it as much as Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, but it was still pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Home is where you
make
it.
It was the comedy of, yeah, exactly.
A lot of quotes came from that,
I did,
too. You can do it. Like, people still say that. That's a big deal. Yeah.
I did have three movies I did want to ask you guys about from this year.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, toss it
out. I didn't see it on this list. First one, There's Something About Mary.
I love that movie.
Oh, how did we forget
that? I don't know.
Because that was a movie I distinctly remember talking to my math teacher about, and like why I thought the whole hair gel scene was funny and why he thought it was two different things, because I didn't get it. He's like, your parents said you watched that movie? I was like, oh, they didn't know. Like, it was just one of those deals. And I remember that conversation, but like so much of that humor went so far over my head, and then it was like, maybe 2 or 3 years later, I was like, oh, this is what all this is. So, yeah.
What did you think it was?
I literally, like, was like, oh, it's funny. He's probably, like, his boogies or something. Like, I didn't even... There wasn't even a moment of, like, I knew. Like I said, sixth grade, I just wasn't...
Oh, that's so good.
I wasn't there yet. So, yeah, didn't know.
Man, it's fucking... That booger humor that they put in those movies, that's so good.
And, you know, to me, the movie that any person says they're a Marvel fan, if you don't appreciate the fact, Blade, to me, was the first really good Marvel movie. And... before we have what we have now, I love that movie. One of my favorite quotes I still say is, some motherfuckers still always trying to ice skate uphill. it still works. Like, I go back and watch it, you know, Wesley Snipes, Stephen Dorff, like, it's just a fun, goofy movie, and it blended horror with, you know, superhero shit. So that was always a fun one for me.
Nice.
And then, of course, there was a little movie called Wild Things, which, you know, I was clearly there just
Nev
for the
Campbell.
Acting. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Nev Campbell was the it girl for a little while.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was soon after Scream and, yeah, yep. Party of Five, all that.
You guys are overlooking that Kevin Bacon and Matt Dillon were also pretty hot in that movie. So
I was partial to Denise Richards. I won't
mind. I mean, Bill Murray for me, but ever teach their own.
Anytime I think of Denise Richards, I think of the fact that they picked her of all people to be a nuclear scientist in a James Bond movie. Just amazing. Cast.
Yeah.
Amazing. Like, of all the people, like, what, was Jenny McCarthy unavailable? Was Carmen Electra, like, busy on Singled Out or something? Like, really? Denise Richards is going to be...
To give a callback to your last episode in that year, I can't ever look at her and forgive her for how she screwed over Johnny and Starship Troopers.
no kidding. Yeah. Oh, serious stuff going on there. Yeah. Bad.
Nice. All right.
But yeah, pretty solid year of movies.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, that's quality.
I'm going to go back and watch The Big Lebowski tonight. Let's breeze through and get to some emails. So we got a couple more things. We got notable events. Google was founded. Still using that basically every day. So I guess that's cool.
I just want to mention real quickly, just to show my age.
Web crawler.
I was still using Excite as my search engine.
Wow.
Excite.com.
Did it like ever show anything when you look for stuff?
Yeah, it did. I mean,
you did?
Yeah, okay. It was. It worked for what I needed it for. You know, like pictures of Randy Moss. I'm just kidding.
Ah, yes.
Threw you a curveball there. But yeah, no, I just find it fascinating that Google was just another search engine for like a long time before they ballooned into what they are now.
Imagine if AltaVista had taken off like that, man.
Ask Jeeves.
That's the one I was going to say.
I know. I do wish people would say, can you Jeeves that? Jeeves that real quick.
Oh, my God.
That'd be amazing. The House of Representatives impeached Bill Clinton in 1998, and that was in December, so it would be the next year before we got to see it go to the other side of Congress. But 1998 was all of the big, you know, your Kenneth Starr, your Monica Lewinsky, like all that stuff, the trial, all that.
Yep.
FDA approved Viagra in the same year because they were like, this trial is great. Mm-hmm. We need to make boners legal.
Yeah, it's good. It's so, good job by you, Trav, to end on some uplifting news there.
Nice. I almost didn't put that together. Most popular TV shows. We've already covered TRL, but 1998. These are all shows that debuted in 1998. So it was actually a pretty good for like lasting television. You had That 70s Show debuted in 98. Sex and the City, Will and Grace, The King of Queens, Dawson's Creek. Brian, you seem like the kind of guy that just loved Dawson's Creek. Cowboy Bebop for our anime friends. And then Whose Line made its American debut. It was also the same year because all of these shows had to get their wings. Seinfeld had to die. So Seinfeld left us in 1998.
Mm. Yeah, the only show on that entire list I ever watched was That 70s Show. And I didn't get that all the way through.
That's the only one I spent any real meaningful time. I mean, Whose Line? Yeah, I catch reruns or watch like clip compilations on YouTube or whatever. But at the time,
and
it
I
was
dug
just...
the King of Queens when it was on. It wasn't like appointment viewing, but if it was on, I'd watch a little.
Oh,
of that,
well,
sure.
Just to, especially if Jerry Stiller was on the screen, because that guy was just comedy gold.
Yes. Yes. But the rest of the shows that I listed did have good long runs and lasting fan bases to this day. Now we got to get to the cool food. Not a lot of cool food in 98, but I did discover that Oreo's O cereal came out that year, and I've never had that, and I imagine I would know if I had because I wouldn't have teeth.
It's so delicious.
Is it good?
I loved it back through in no the teeth? Day. Yes. Hold on, let me put these back in. yeah, Oreo O's. That was... I really like them, and I'm a sucker for gimmicky cereal. Even to this day, I'm like, oh shit, Hostess made a new cereal. Let me try it. Like it's just one of those things. But yeah, I liked them back in the day.
Is there like an E3 for cereal where they drop trailers for new cereals?
That would be fucking
awesome.
That is
$1 billion idea right there. I would go to that.
I would love that.
Dude, I would create like a freaking tailgate party for that and the whole thing. That would be so much
fun.
Dude,
like seriously, a whole like new food E3 where you just, you got your new like, you know, you mentioned tailgate, new tailgate and food. We got new pizza roll lines coming out. Dude, I would be all over that shit. I'm starving right now for some Big Lebowski and pizza rolls. All right, well, list three of the best-selling books of 98. Clash of Kings, it's the follow-up from George R.R. Martin. Digital Fortress, which is a pretty good Dan Brown book. This was before his Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code, Digital Fortress. And Bag of Bones was the Stephen King book that came out. I also want to say Rainbow Six, Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six came out in 98. So those are some that people may recognize. There you go. And then for toys, we got the Furby, dudes. Everybody remembers the Furby. You did not everyone had one, but everyone remembers and was felt threatened by the Furby.
Yeah. They were pretty dang scary. Do you know who made the Furby? Fun fact.
Oh god, no, I don't.
Tiger,
was it Michael Bay?
Tiger Electronics. The same folks that made those handheld games. The makers of your favorite console, Trav, Tiger Gamecom, they also cranked out the Furby.
Makes God, sense. Why does that not surprise me at all? God.
Dude, and I always thought Furbies looked like a scaled-down, shitty gremlin.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they look like that's a great observation. They look like a Sesame Street-ized gremlin. Like if they had to have a gremlin on Sesame Street, it would look like that.
Yep.
And the Furby was available all the way until 2018 when it was discontinued. I guess it was discontinued a couple times, but it had a revival in 2012 and kept going.
Oh, it came back in 2018 for that 20-year anniversary, I guess. Ugh. Damn, those things, they still, you know what? I went to the Wikipedia page and just the image, I've been to some dark Wikipedia pages, but the Furby one, that image is the worst.
It's not safe for life scariest. Warning on these.
I think it's because they don't have arms, man. You can't be that happy and just not, I mean, you don't even have legs. You're just, oh, I'm upset. I can't. They can't be that happy.
Dude.
All right, well, that was toys.
Back away from the screen, man. You gotta
I need to.
Should we just do a couple emails here?
Yeah, let's hop in.
Or should we do all three?
I could. It doesn't matter to me. We'll jump in. We'll do what we can here. We'll see how these go. First one here is from Alex in Chicago. Selling Retro Games is the title of the email. Alex says, hey, y'all, happy holidays. Happy Thanksgiving, Alex. Hope you had a good one.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Yeah.
Hope you had a good time. Relaxing time.
Yeah. I know I did. He says, first off, my question is about selling retro stuff. I'm a big SNES collector with a 200-plus game collection that I don't want to give up, but I want to sell off my other smaller collections, about 50 games total across systems like the N64, the 360, and PS2, because I don't feel the nostalgia for them and don't really see myself playing them anymore. The thing is, in some cases, I don't even have systems to test those games on anymore, but I assume they work. In general, what advice do you have for someone trying to sell off a lot of games at once? I'd love to just throw the whole lot up on eBay and say you have to buy all of it together, but I'm not sure that makes sense, especially since I can't be 100% sure some of the discs still work. But then again, I don't want to buy a PS2 to test them, just to have to sell it back. As Mark Summers said, what would you do? Alex, in Chicago. Well, I tell you what I see all the time, people just selling things and just declaring them untested, like good condition, untested.
As is.
Yeah, and for games, I think, especially for the cartridge stuff, that risk is kind of assumed. I don't even care for most of the cartridge stuff because, like, 99.9% of the time, I could probably get it working. Mm-hmm. Disc stuff, just include a picture of the disc. And if it's... people have a scratch criteria, and they'll be like, that's a little too scratchy for me. Or they'll be like, oh, that looks good, I'll buy that. And so you kind of leaving it up to them. That's basically what I would do. I don't think you really have to go out of your way to test anything.
That's exactly what I'd be looking for if I were going to buy a lot of games like that. Just, I'd be looking at the discs and seeing if there's anything, you know, of interest in the lot. Just post, yeah, just be, I guess, just be, you know, very thorough with the pictures.
Yeah. And just say, yeah, it's untested. You assume it works because it's in whatever condition. You know, as long as you're honest, I think for the most part, you're in good shape. And I guess if you can't test it, just make sure that you are open to refunding anyone who is unsatisfied. A big red flag for me is always like, untested, no refunds. I'm like, well, I guess we're not doing business.
Yeah. That's some silly shit when you see that.
Yeah, that's...
But like when he's also talking about like selling off a lot of games at once, honestly, eBay, I know, kind of rips you off, I feel like, on some sale prices. For something like this, you may want to do Facebook like Marketplace or something like that where
that's
you can take a lot of good pictures. You can write a price individually or say price in such a way where it makes sense. Like if you just want to buy this lot, it's X. But if you start looking down each individual game, if you did want it that way, you know, just make it clear. And to Travis' point, like take a picture of the back of the CDs. Let them decide, but, you know, yeah, I think that's probably your best way to go.
Yeah, happy selling.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck, bud.
Yeah, I might be interested in some shit. You got that drunk fan email address, holler at it.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
If you have horror games, let me know.
Like,
you know?
Dude, what do you have?
Yeah.
holler at it. Alex, you want to take the next one?
Sure. Is Kelly Ripa just liquid Kathy Lee? Asks Patrick.
What?
I don't understand. I think it goes back to the tweet I made where I was asking for emails. And I
what a great question.
Just off the top of my head, just like, hey, what about you can write to us about Regis Kathy Lee or Regis and Kathy Lee. I don't know why I made the mistake of saying that, but anyway, this email goes, hello, what if everything you knew about daytime TV was a lie? What if Gelman cloned Kathy Lee when she got too old to be on TV? Isn't she still on TV? But she wasn't an exact clone due to, enter Kojima brand bullshit science here, making liquid Kathy Lee. That would mean there is a solid Kathy Lee, too, and a solidus Kathy Lee, but that's just Ellen DeGeneres. Like, come on, that's common knowledge. What if Dr. Phil was now a double agent because he had Regis's arm transplanted on him by Dr. Oz and the Regis brain from the arm took over? What? Regis brain from the arm? What if Dr. Phil was really a triple agent, only pretending to be taken over by Regis's arm?
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
All right, we're this far. Why not? Though I think it's obvious at this point that Donald Trump is made of nanomachines, son, and we need a cybernetic Ryan Seacrest to show him the rules of nature, which is in all caps. I don't know where I was going with this, neither do I. I've only played the MSX Metal Gears. This is all I know about Metal Gear Solid, though. I hope it ate up time.
But boy, did it.
You did it. You've done it, Patrick. You've done it.
And guys, I want to say, if you do want to send us an email, hi, you can. We may read it.
Dude, you can tell me, what strain is that, Patrick? Like, are you rocking some freaking like birthday cake, wedding cake? Like, what are you smoking over there? Jeez.
He had some of that leafy Kathy Lee.
I'd say Patrick is definitely out of his element.
You're out of your element, Patrick.
There's a couple lines in there that got me pretty hard, though. I love just jumping straight to triple agent. Just so good.
I don't think I've ever heard triple agent before. It's a great turn of phrase.
Wonderful stuff, Patrick. I don't know if there was a question in there, but if there was, yes.
Yeah, the answer to whatever is yes.
All right, we'll crank out one more here. We got from our pal Blake Mountain, who I hear is tall. Titles it 90s ass sports movies. Howdy, Alex and Trav. Happy Great American Pie Day. Oh, I don't know if we missed that, Alex, but that sounds wonderful.
It does sound wonderful. You guys ever have those banquet pot pies?
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. Those were like my lifeblood when I first moved out. They were like 50 cents each.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I might go. Trav, you're going to go watch Big Lebowski and eat pizza rolls. I'm going to go get like 25 banquet pot pies for 13 bucks or something. Yeah,
I'm going to get a pot pie and then dip my pizza rolls in the gravy. I'm going to win tonight. But he goes on to say, I've been loving all these 90s ass episodes recently. It made me think about how many awesome 90s sports movies there are. I loved Rudy so much as a kid, and A League of Their Own might be in my top 10 movies of all time. So to scratch both the 90s and sports related itch, what are some of your favorite 90s ass sports movies? Actual good movies or so bad it's good are acceptable. Thanks for the amazing podcast and keep up the great work, y'all. Blake Mountain, P.S. P.S. guys, my mom, this is from Blake, my mom's cousin played the pitcher with the big butt from Rookie of the Year.
Oh, my goodness.
That's cool. Nice.
That is a claim to fame. Well, a near claim to fame. Good job, Blake. Good job, your mom's cousin.
Yeah, great job by your mom's cousin. I remember seeing Rookie of the Year in theaters, and I think when... He says at the doc, I think they're in the doctor's office, like, did you say monkey butt lovin'? I think that was like the hardest I'd ever laughed at that point in my life. I thought that was hysterically funny. To this day, I'll still, yeah. If somebody says funky butt lovin', I'm still gonna laugh. So, yeah.
You're so right. You're so right. I'm gonna drop three because I was a. Mostly a young kid in the 90s. Most of my sports movies memories are mostly kids movies, but I love The Little Giants.
Yes.
Absolutely loved it. Had Lunchbox in there. Devon Sawa was funny in that. Good stuff. I love The Mighty Ducks, all of them.
Yes.
There's probably good ones and bad ones, but I just loved, I didn't know any better. I loved all of them. And I also liked Angels in the Outfield, which I watched again and didn't hold up as well for me, but I know as a kid I loved it, so I have to mention that one.
Nice. Alex, you want to go?
Yeah, I guess just Mighty Ducks was super fun. I still use the gif occasionally of, what's the guy's, the actor's name is Lane something. It's the evil other coach. That's the way he like pulls up his lapels on his leather jacket. That always cracks me up every time because it's so like, you know, like, hello, I'm the bad guy here. How can I help you? But it's Mighty Ducks was a big deal because that was shot. They had the big rollerblading scene in Mall of America. And I remember they were doing a casting call for that. And a lot of people at my school went. I don't think anybody actually got to be in it that I knew, but I remember that just being like a massive event.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, by the time everybody got to see that movie, it had a lot of buildup, so that was cool. I can't really think of anything else though. Those are the ones I saw in the early 90s as a kid. Were
what about
great.
The Sandlot?
Sandlot, of course. Yeah. And Sandlot holds up pretty well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have my five. They're a little out there, but you guys mentioned two of them. Sandlot, Little Giants, of course.
Hell yeah.
Another one, I know it's not in the same exact vein as sports, but I'm going to say Kingpin because it's one of my...
Oh, nice.
Like, I love that comedy so nice. Much.
Yeah, that is my favorite.
It treats itself as a sports movie, which I think counts.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's well put. Yeah, that is my favorite Farley Brothers movie, if I had to pick one.
Yes, that's mine. It's an underrated comedy. Just... they're so quotable. A random one that probably nobody knows about, but I liked was Ladybugs.
Was that Rodney Dangerfield?
Two reasons. One, that was a time for some reason I just like got into random Rodney Dangerfield like movies. but I also had a huge crush on Vanessa Shaw, who was the girl in there. So, yeah.
Mm.
And my final one is Basketball.
Oh, was that in the 90s? Holy shit.
Yep.
I guess it was. It was 98.
Yeah.
It was 98? Yep. What?
Like, that movie, like, I mean, number one, I was such a huge, huge South Park fan that just seeing that was like, just fucking all that time, like, your sister fucks squeak. like that movie, I could still rewatch. It's such atypical South Park humor, but I love it to this day.
Yeah, Steve Perry. I still say that every once in a while. And of course, it's the only time you're going to hear Al Michaels and Bob Costas. You think you're excited? Feel these nipples.
Yep. So, yeah. Nobody in that movie took himself serious, and it was great.
Yeah, it was. That's nice. Exactly right.
All right, nice. One more honorable mention for me. I'm going to toss out Varsity Blues. That was I enjoyed that.
Hey, I don't want this late. Right, I don't want your life.
Your life. Come on, Mox. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've done it. I think we 1998'd, and we did it pretty hard. I think we did it pretty thorough. I'm proud of us. I'm sure in the next episode we'll be talking to our next guest and be like, oh, we forgot to mention this from 1998. But right now I feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's pretty thorough. Thanks, Brian. You brought a ton of very useful stuff. We forgot about a lot of the stuff that you brought to light. So thanks for the insight. Yeah. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me on. And as long as I did better than Jim, then I'm good.
I don't know. No comment.
Jury's still out on that. We'll take it to the judges.
Yeah. Well, last time we had Jim talk up what you guys do, and this time you get another opportunity to do that. So where can people find you? What you guys doing? What's coming out? What's going on?
I truly appreciate that. Just search Drink a Beer and Play a Game. The only other place where it's different is at A Beer and Game on Twitter. We have a new episode of our Power Hour podcast coming out tomorrow, actually from Polykill. We have Pam and Michelle talking about the Point and Drink adventures. And just doing a whole lot of drinking and bullshitting. So if you like guys talking while drunk, come over and listen to us. And yeah, just want to thank you guys again. Really appreciate you having us on.
Of course.
Having me on.
Thanks for taking the time.
Trust me. We know you don't appreciate us for having Jim on, but absolutely having you on was a blast. And yeah, everyone, that's been another Drunk Friend podcast. Please head on over to polymedianetwork.com. We got other podcasts over there. We got Tales of the Lesser Medium, Polykill, the aforementioned Point and Drink Adventure, Indie Quest, Uncle Doug's DVD Bin, and we got Goosebumps, and maybe more. I don't even know anymore. It keeps growing and growing. Please send an email to the show. Wish us a happy holidays, and we'll read it near a holiday. You can do that at drunkfriendpodcast@gmail.com.
Right on. And if you're not interested in sending an email, that's not a big deal. Just give us a rating and review on a podcast app of your choice, and that'll help us out big time. And you know what? I'm going to throw this idea out there. If you just have like an observation or a snarky comment, why don't you can add us on Twitter, or you can like just do hashtag drunk friend, and I'll keep that bookmarked and I'll search it. See if we can get something smart going that way too.
That'd be pretty smart. Yeah, drop in all your 90s ass references.
Yeah, 90s
right
ass
there.
90s ass memories. You can do it. 90s ass memories might be too long of a hashtag, but
I think numbers are kind of weird on hashtags.
Yeah,
too, right?
Yeah. But yeah, just let us hear from you.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And you can find us, as you said, on social media. On Twitter, I'm at Trav Plays Games. Alex is, of course, at SNES Drunk. And Brian, what's that again? Add a beer and a game?
On Twitter, everywhere else, just type in drink a beer, play a game, and you'll find us.
Right on. Yeah. And the track you hear was composed by our friend Coolor, and it's called Electric Star Bounce. You can find a link to more of his music on the Buzzsprout podcast page. And a shout out to Josh Leslie for our thirst quenching logo.
Be sure to catch us all on YouTube and the podcast machines, and thanks for listening.
And we hope you have a great rest of your day. Derp.